So we left off the previous year. We were discussing the din of matana manas lahachzir. Although the Gemara wasn't quite sure at the beginning of the sugya whether a matana manas lahachzir, with a gift given with the express condition to return it, is actually considered to be a matana altogether, or maybe we should argue that since the condition to return it undermines the very essence of the matana, so the Gemara concluded that in fact it is a matana and it is valid in just about all areas of halacha, with the exception of kedusha. And even there, we weren't even sure whether the kedusha was the exception in atar mid rabbanon. But putting aside kedusha for a minute, in the realm of other areas of halacha, matana manasachzir is considered to be matana, and particularly in the realm of lulav yesrig, that was actually the original source of the din. That in order to fulfill the din of lulav yesrig, it has to belong to you. As long as it was granted to you as a matana manasachzir, that would be acceptable. So we ended off the end of the shiur with the following question. We want to know, what's the nature of a matana manas lahachzir? Should we say that it's fundamentally what we call a kinyan lazman? It's a kinyan with a very, very limited time scope to it. Not the time, a time in the calendar, but rather a time until an event happens. So it belongs to you until you return it, but after you return it, so then it's not yours at all, and it is only a very, very limited in terms of scope. Although I say no, that a matana manas lahachzir is a matana liolam. It's a kinyan for all of eternity. It's forever and ever and ever yours. There's a little bit of a quirk. The quirk is that the condition that I made forces you to return it. But fundamentally, it's no different than any other matana la'olam. So at the end of the day, what's the difference? At the end of the day, it works. At the end of the day, you have to return it. So who cares whether you say azoi, whether it's called the matana la'zman, matana la'olam, who cares? So the Rosh, in the second page of the Maamar Kamos, in Masechet Sukkos, in the third parak in Siman Lamed, so the Rosh picks up on the first one lies Haisa. So it's in Siman Lamed. It's about 12, 15 lines down from where Siman Lamed begins. The first one line is Haisa. Towards the end of that line, Vitzar Shit Neolo. So at the end of that line, it started with Haisa. It's Vitzar Shit Neolo, B'matana Gemura Amanashi Achzir. So the Rosh just added in a word. We've been talking about a matana amanas lahachzir. The Rosh just told us, by the way, make sure it's a matana gemur. It's a complete matana amanas lahachzir. V'yachas sheyotze bo, and after the other person is yotze with it, tzorech lachzor v'litna lo b'matana b'shas chazara. The recipient of the matana must give it back to you, but has to be maknet back to you, has to give it back to you as a matana, as a return, as a gift, at the time that he finishes using it. So what is the Rosh coming to exclude? He's coming to exclude as follows. One could have conceived that upon the return of this matana, there's no need to make a kinyan. There's no need for me to pick up the matana on its return. What would the din be if I say to you, I'm hereby giving you a matana until July 1st. Not that long from now. Until July, until tomorrow, I'm giving you this matana, and the matana should take effect now, and it should belong to you until July 1st. The minute July 1st comes, the matana reverts back to me. There is no need to be remachna. There's no need to make another maisekinin on return, because the matana was only sold to you, was only given to you for X amount of time. So the Rosh is quick to point out that one could have, according to the Rosh, mistakenly understood that that's what a matana mastachzir is, that I have to give it to you on the condition that you, quote-unquote, return it to me, but that return need not be as a maisekinin. So if one would have mistakenly understood that a matana manas lahachzir is a kinyan lazman, that would have sufficed just to, quote-unquote, return it, even though I didn't really literally pick it up as a matana with all the regular rules of kinyanim. So comes the Rosh and says that is not correct. Why? Because a matana manas lahachzir is, in fact, a real matana, liolam vod. Aval, the Rosh continues. Avalim amalo yehei b'matana ad sheteitze bo v'achar kach yehei sheli kibatchila. But if I say to you, here's this lulav and esrog. It should belong to you until I'm yotze with it, and until you're yotze with it. And once you're yotze with it, then it should become mine by itself. It should revert back to my ownership without a formal ma'asekinyan. If that's how we word the matana, lo yotze bo, says the Rosh, that would not be acceptable. That's not a matana. A manas lahachzir. That is a matana luzman, and a matana luzman is not acceptable. So the Rosh in these two lines just developed for us two very, very different ways of formulating what superficially appears to be the same. In both cases, I own the lulav and esrog, and I give it to you, and you give it back to me. So says the Rosh, but there are two very different ways of doing that. Either I can give it to you liolam vod, with the stipulation that you have to be machted back to me at some point, That's one way. Or I can give it to you for X amount of time. Says the Rush, the first route is going to be effective. The second route is going to fall short. Because if all I gave you was a matan lizman, that is not acceptable for Luvin Esrig. How do you know that's not acceptable for Luvin Esrig? So the Rush gives the following mashal. Tahavi kamo sha'ol. It's like you borrowed the Luvin Esrig. What is the difference between giving you a kinyan lizman and lending something to you? So that's the punchline of the Rush. If you had to draw an equation on the board for this Rush, the Rush has created an equation for us. Matan lizman is the halak equivalent of a she'ela, of a loan. And what's so terrible about a she'ela? The Mishnah says, lulav ha'shol is no good. The Mishnah says explicitly in Masechet Sukkah, ulkachtem lochem. Lochem comes to exclude both a stolen lulav as well as a borrowed lulav. And therefore, says the Rush, if a borrowed lulav is not acceptable, so similarly, a matan lizman lulav is also not acceptable, which forces us to conclude that a matanah minas achzer is not a matan lizman. But the fact that it is acceptable, that shows beyond the shadow of a doubt that a matanah minas achzer is much more than a kinyan lizman, it's a kinyan li'olam. Now the Rush is going to prove that his theory is correct. Vitei, that'll prove to you. Midiyama l'kaman, there's a gemara later on in Masechet Sukkah. Lo likne inish luliva liyanuka biyamatava kama, tiyanukna makrikoni aknuyala makne. There's a very, very potentially controversial gemara on Daf Mem Vav and Beis in Sukkah, where the gemara says that on the first day of Sukkot, one has to be careful not to give a lulav to a child, because the child has the ability to acquire the lulav. By giving it to him, he owns it. But the problem is, a child has no ability to give it back to me. A child cannot make a matana back in return. So now it'll turn out, if I was already yotze with the lulav and I want to give it to me afterwards, that's fine. But if I wasn't yotze yet, and the halacha requires that lulav be lochem, it has to belong to me, if I give it to my child before I'm yotze with it, when he tries to give it back to me, he cannot effectively do that in halacha. And now it turns out that I'm borrowing a lulav of my child, which is not acceptable in the Torah. So most of us could theoretically breathe a sigh of relief. Even those who give their lulav to their little children usually do it after they themselves are yotze. So what could possibly go wrong? Because in subsequent days, Chol HaMoed, there is no need to own the lulav in Esrog. Lachem is not required. So what's the problem? I should be yotze first, but I give it to my kid, everything will be great. If you live in Eretz Yisrael, that's fine. But if you live in Chutz Laaretz, so then there's a second day of Yontif. And on the second day of Yontif, so the Ran raises a question whether all the dinim that are required on the first day of Yontif may very well be required on the second day of Yontif in Chutz Laaretz. And that's how we pask in La'alocha. Therefore, the dinim of Sha'ul would be disqualified on the second day of Yontif as well. So here a person could have the goodness of his heart, try to be mechadach his child, and blow it for himself on the second day, because he gave it to his child on the first day after he was yotze, and now the child technically halachically owns it. If the child gives it back to you, that doesn't work. And now on the second day of yotze, that could potentially raise a red flag. So therefore, we should try to observe this din for us in Chutz Laaretz, even vis-a-vis the second day of yotze, even after we were already yotze. But this basic halacha is going to become one of the proofs of the Rush, but we can't even get to the Rush's proof until we really truly understand it. So what did the Gemara tell us exactly? That I could give the gift to the child, that'll be an effective transfer of ownership, and the child has no right to give it back to me. So that's not 100% true. The Mishnah says in Maseches Gittin, Hapa'utos mekech mekech, and I'm karem, because that was already Daf Yomi, it just came up in Daf Yomi a couple of days ago. Hapa, like a day ago, if I'm not mistaken. Hapa'utos mekech mekech, and I'm karem, that children, once they're old enough to understand what's going on in the marketplace, do have the ability to buy and sell. The Gemara speaks of Rav Abbasi about them not having the ability to buy and sell karka. That was a special takanas hachamim, that even after a boy turns bar mitzvah, we don't want him to sell land, because land is very complicated, and the child's probably not going to be sophisticated enough to sell. So we wait until he's 18 or 20, until he's able to sell real estate. But Metalpalin, once he's pa'utos, once he understands what's going on, so he does have the ability to buy and sell. He does have the ability to give gifts. So what's the problem? So I'll give the lulav to my 11-year-old boy. He knows what it means to go to the store. Unfortunately, our kids probably know what it means to buy more than we do. Well, they think that they, with our credit cards, they know exactly what to buy. So when I give a gift to the child, what's the big deal? He'll give it back to me 5 minutes later, and that should be acceptable. So there are some who will say, you're right, that the Gemara is only talking about a child under the age of Pa'utos. Talking about a 3-year-old, not a 12-year-old. If you give your luv to a 12-year-old, you know, chinami, that would be okay. You give it to him, he gives it back to you, and shalom Yisrael. But if he's under the age of peutos, he's 3-4 years old, then and only then is it a problem. That's what some Mishnayim say. And other Mishnayim say, no, Tosfos writes that it's a problem, even if he's 12 and a half, his day before his bar mitzvah, it's still a problem. Why is it a problem? Because even though it's true that a child can give me a gift back, but that's only midirabbanan. Min haTorah, he's called a la barda. So min haTorah, he doesn't have the ability to transfer ownership. As such, when I give him the gift, so the gift belongs to him, min haTorah. When he tries to give it back to me, he can only do that midirabbanan. I can't be yotze, luvin esrog, but luvin esrog that only belongs to me midirabbanan. Luvin esrog is a mitzvah deraisa. So the standards of ownership have to be Torah standards of ownership. I can't be yotze lachem with something that's not lachem on a love of deraisa. So even though, if I would ask Rav Yosef Kara, the Baal Shulchan Aruch, and say to him, you know, tell me who owns this lulav, so the answer is, I own it. In Chashem Mishpat, in Beis Din, Dinim Amunis, I own the lulav, once he gives it back to me. But if I would ask Moshe Rabbeinu, who owns the lulav, he'd say, who owns the lulav? Well, you gave it to the child, so he's Kona Min HaTorah. So I return to Moshe Rabbeinu and say, but Mid Rabbanon, he can be Machne back to me. Moshe Rabbeinu said, and I'm not holding the Mishnah Gittin. Moshe Rabbeinu, even though the Gemara says that, the Baal Shulchan showed Moshe Rabbeinu all the future Dinim the Rabbanon. He showed it to him, but it's still not practical halacha. So the days of the Midbar, if I would give it to the child, and the child wants to give it back, but it's not going to work, the mechanics aren't going to work, because min haTorah is kona, min drabanan, he can be makli, but that's not enough min haTorah. Then Tosfos raises a further question. How is he kona min haTorah? He's a labardas. What gave him the ability to be kona min haTorah? So Tosfos introduces a new concept. Tosfos says, what's called das secheres makna oso. When I give a gift to a child, even though he himself doesn't have das, he doesn't have the understanding to acquire it, but I can provide the understanding on his behalf. And how does that work? That's a whole other story. So that Gemara is very, very important. That Gemara said a sukkah could be a springboard for many, many shiurim. But for our purposes, we want to focus on the follows. We want to focus on the Gemara just closes the door on giving the luv and esrog to the child. It's impossible to give a luv and esrog to a child in the first day of sukkahs. So comes the Rush and says, why is it so impossible? So the Rush continues. We'll go back to Viteda. So it's the second line, second word for the end of the line. So the last word of the Lord has been the Amar. Viteda, I'm going to prove to you, says the Rush, that a Matanam Ras Tahachzir requires a re-giving, a formal re-giving of the gift back to the original owner. Viteda, but the Amar, come on, the Gemara says later on, the Likani Inish, the Livali Yanuka, one should not give as a gift, the lulav to the child, on the first day of Yantiv, to Yanuka make nikana, because the child can acquire knu lamakni, but he can't give back. Asks the Rosh, if a matana doesn't require an actual formal re-giving of matana, even though it's true a child can't give a matana, likne le achlo achiyetibo, belachse lo memela. If a matanam ras ha'achzer is not a kidin li'olam, it's only a kidin lizman, then it doesn't require a re-giving back of the matana. If it doesn't require a re-giving back of the matana, why can't I give it to a child? I can give it to the child and say, it's yours until July 15th. When July 15th comes, it will revert back to me. So that's okay. What would be wrong with that? So from the fact that that doesn't appear in the Gemara, the fact that Gemara doesn't give that as an option, the answer is, the reason why it doesn't appear is because that wouldn't be good enough. That would be a matana lizman, which is not called lechem, that's merely a sha'ol. And a child doesn't have the ability to actually give back as a gift. So when all the dust settles, the Rush is sticking to his position that matana lizman is the equivalent of sha'ela, which is in fact not acceptable. The only way it's going to work is based on a matana manas ach, which is a matana la'olam with the Tanai of Chazara, and his proof positive is from that Gemara Maseches Sukkah. So notwithstanding the strength of the argument of the Rush, there are those who disagree with the Rush. So the Ketzos quotes this Rush, and the Ketzos says, there's something about this Rush that's bothering him. He says he doesn't think that it's right. He doesn't, in his gut feeling, he doesn't think that it's right. He thinks that a matana manas ach here is not all that different than a matana lizman. Now, of course, he has to explain, so imkain, what's the difference between that and she'ela? And he has to address the proof of the Rush. But first, it still says in his gut, in his heart of hearts, he feels against the Rush. He thinks that a matana lizman is not all that the Rush made it out to be. But the Ketzos writes, you know, Nachron, disagree with the Rush. So he says, I'm going to start doing my homework. I'm going to start looking around. He writes, I'm going to find the Rishon. There's got to be some Rishon out there who disagrees with the Rush. And he says, Baruch Hashem, Shekivanti L'das HaKadmon. I found an early source that disagrees. The early source is one of the, from the period of the Bali HaToysos, Rabbeinu Avigdor. So we don't know that much about him, except one thing we do know, he was a Kohen. Because he's quoted by the show as being Rabbeinu Avigdor Katz. Katz being Rashi for a Kohen Tzedek. So Rabbeinu Avigdor HaKohen disagrees with the Rush. But here the Ktzais had a lot of siyata nishmaya. How in the world did the Ktzais dig up this Rabbeinu Avigdor? Because it's quoted in the Tshuvas HaRosh. The Tshuvas HaRosh, who disagrees with Rabbeinu Avigdor. Here he doesn't quote it, but in the Tshuvas HaRosh he quotes Rabbeinu Avigdor and he disagrees with him. What did Rabbeinu Avigdor say? So Rabbeinu Avigdor writes that it would appear to him that a matonam ras hachzir is literally the halach equivalent of a matona lizman. It is no more and no less than giving a gift until time ploni. And therefore, when time ploni arrives, there is no need to make a formal return of the matana. It happens by itself. So, asked Rabbeinu Avigdor on himself. So, Im Kain, what is it? So, it was like anticipating the Rosh's cashes. So, Im Kain, what is the difference between a matana amanas lahachzir and a she'ela, which is in fact not acceptable? So, says Rabbeinu Avigdor, there's a big difference. It's also a little bit of a throwback to sugyas in Perek Yeshnocha Daf Yomi a couple of weeks ago. Rabbeinu Avigdor says, if you look at the Gemara in many places, there's a difference between a kinyan haguf and a kinyan lizman. A kinyan haguf, kishmakenu, that means you own the object itself. I own these glasses, I own this cup of water, I own this jacket, I own this land, I own this animal, I own this asterisk. That's called a kinyan haguf. The contrast to a kinyan haguf is what's called the kinyan peiros. Kinyan peiros means I have absolutely no ownership in this item per se, but I do own the rights of usage of this item. So in terms of the guf hadavar, in terms of the item proper, that I don't own. The original owner retains the status as the owner. I have what's called the kinyan peiros on this item. Now this entity in Halacha called kinyan peiros is very, very tricky because there's a big machlekes in the Gemara between Rabbi Yechon and Rabbi Shlokish. Is kinyan peiros ke kinyan haguf? Or is kinyan peiros lav ke kinyan haguf? For all those areas of Halacha which require ownership, so do we say that merely owning the object vis-a-vis the peiros is tantamount to a kinyan haguf? And for whatever areas of Halacha, Rechaim, Yerdei, etc., which are governed by kinyan haguf, that's good enough? What do I say? No. Kinyan peiros lav ke kinyan haguf. So we happened about, this is one of the three cases that we follow Rish Lachish, the Gemara says in Yevamos, we pass like Rish Lachish in this one. Kinyan peiros is lav ke kinyan haguf tomi. The mere ownership of peiros is not qualified as a kinyan haguf. One of the famous examples of this machlokes was if a person buys the rights of using the fruit, of getting the fruit from a field, you retain the ownership in the field, but I acquire the rights of usage of the fruit. So I make a deal with you that all the fruit in the next 50 years or for eternity, whatever the case, whatever deal we make, I'm going to be able to reap the benefits. I'm going to be able to eat the fruit. You're not going to be able to stop me. But in terms of the guf hakarka, you still retain the rights of guf hakarka. So when I harvest those fruit, I bring those fruit as bikurim. The problem is, when I come to the Beis HaMikdash to bring bikurim, I'm supposed to read the parsha, I'm supposed to say Rami Ovid Avi. And the end of the parsha says, thank you Hashem, al adam asher asata li Hashem, that you gave me the land. So Rish Lakish raises a red flag. Rish Lakish says, you can't say that line. That's a lie. You don't own that land. You own the fruits of the land, but it says Hashem Asata Li Hashem. You have to own the land itself. So therefore, Rish Lakish says that Kona Peiros, if a person buys Kona Sotla Peiros, is Mevi Vieno Kairi. I bring the Bikurim, because the fruit is fruit. I still own the fruit, so I bring the Bikurim. But in terms of the saying of the Parsha, Eino Kairi. And Rabbi Yechon says, no, Mevi Vikairi. Because Rabbi Yochanan said that Kinyan Peiros is Kikirin Aguf. So again, we paskin that maybe Vienna Kairi. So comes Rabbeinu Avigdor and says that this entity, this halachic formulation called the Kinyan Peiros, which is not the equivalent of owning something, says Rabbeinu Avigdor, guess what? Borrowing something is nothing more than a Kinyan Peiros. When I borrow an item from you, I borrow your car. So what does that mean, I borrow your car? So if I say to you, I want to borrow your car for the next week, and we make a Kinyan on that borrowing, you can't back out. You have no right to come to me in 2 days and I say, sorry, I need the car. If I make a kinyan on it, so even though the kinyan was not vis-a-vis the guf hadavar, it was vis-a-vis the kinyan peiros, the schusei atashmish, the ability to use the item. So using the car is like eating the fruit of the land. It's the schus atashmish of the car. It's the payrus, so to speak, of the car, but it's not the car proper. Now, you can't back out because you can't back out from the schus atashmish, from the schus payrus, but in terms of the ownership of the car, you are the owner of the car. I am not the owner of the car. So comes the Rabbeinu Avigdor and says, whenever you have a relationship of a shoel and a mashiel, all you have is the equivalent of a chilas payrus, and that's not acceptable, and that's not good to be called lachem. So the same way that when I buy the rights of eating the fruit from you, I cannot say shenasata li Hashem, because it's not li. So too, when I buy the rights of usage of that lulav, which is accomplished by an act of she'ela, yes, I own the peiros, I own the schus atashmish, which is the halach equivalent of the peiros, but that's not called lachem, and that would not be acceptable for lulav on the first day. So that's why lulav ha-shaul falls short. But, says Rabbeinu Avigdor, a matana lizman, if I give you a gift of a lulav for X amount of time, I give you this, it's your lulav until November 1st, even though on November 1st it's going to revert back to me without a kinyan, says Rabbeinu Avigdor, so what? Ul kachdem lachem? Right now it's lachem. Right now you own a kinyan aguf on it. The kinyan aguf is going to end, but it's, right now it's a kinyan aguf. It's not a kinyan payrus, it's a kinyan aguf. Says Rabbeinu Avigdor, miksiv lachem liyoylo. Does it say in the Chumash, ul kachdem lachem, dovesh lachem, Liolom doesn't say that. It says Lochem. So says Rabbeinu Avigdor, Ela mitzvah el esman of Ashaytai. A mitzvah is the Torah right now, the here and now. What's going to be tomorrow? Don't worry about tomorrow. What's going to be right now? So right now, on 10 o'clock in the morning, on Sukkot morning, the first day, where the halacha requires Lochem, Tos is Lochem. That's Rabbeinu Avigdor's argument against the words of the Rush. So now we have a major machlokes between Rabbeinu Avigdor and the Rush. How do you define Lochem? Is lachem defined by a lachem la'olam, or is lachem defined by a lachem of the here and now? The Rush couldn't believe that lachem would be defined by the here and now. Therefore, he had to elevate the category of matar as lahachzer into something much greater than that. It's matas to be matar li'olam vod, with a stipulation to be able to return it. And Rabbeinu Avigdor was comfortable with a kinyan haguf lizman. Kinyan peiros, that's no good. But a kinyan haguf, albeit lizman, is acceptable. Therefore, according to Rabbeinu Avigdor was free to call a matar maslahachzir a kinyan, a mere kinyan haguf, albeit lizman. But now, of course, Rabbeinu Avigdor has to address the second question of the Rush. Then, how come the Gemara doesn't say it? The Gemara, in one fell swoop, says, one should not be mocked at the lulav to his friend, to the child, because it's impossible. Gaval is going to be terrible. No, no, no. So comes the Rush and says, why did the Gemara give the option of mataras ha'achzir? You see from here that wouldn't be a good option. So comes Rabbeinu Avigdor and presumably would respond, as the Ktzoi says, presumably Rabbeinu Avigdor would respond is, what do you mean it wouldn't be a good option? The Gemara wasn't talking about that option. The Gemara is just trying to give you a guidelines and saying, don't be foolish. Don't do the following. You just spent $300 on a beautiful lulav and esrog, and now you're going to give it to your child, and you're going to blow it. Is the Gemara telling you how to give it to your child? No. That wasn't the topic of the Gemara. Look in the Rishon. Rishon, look in the Shulchan, figure out how to do it. So comes the Rabbeinu Avigdor and would respond to the Rush by saying, that Gemara is not approved of anything. The Gemara was just saying what not to do. The Gemara wasn't telling you what yes to do. So therefore, how would you go about giving it to your child? Give it to them as a matan mas lahachzir, and everybody's happy, because if you give it to them as a matan mas lahachzir, the child will own it sufficiently to fulfill lachem, even though it's only a matana lizman. When the zman is over, remember the Rush said the only reason why it can't go back to from the child is because the child has to be remachnit. That was only according to what the Rabbeinu Avigdor would say, the Rush's erroneous understanding. But according to the Rabbeinu Avigdor, what he would claim is the correct understanding of matan mas lahachzir, that it's a kinyan lizman, so it happens by itself. So at the termination of the time is once the child picks it up and shakes it, then mamele goes back to the father. So that raya of the Rush was not convincing. So the Rush started off with two, what seemed to be very, very strong proofs in his favor. That number one, what's the difference between matanas achzir and a she'ela? And number two, the Gemara tells us you shouldn't give it to the child, implying that there's no way to give it to a child. This is nothing, not true. Said the raya from She'ela is Nishkin raya, because She'ela is fundamentally different. And the raya from the Gemara is limiting the giving to the child. The Gemara wasn't addressing what the correct way of doing that is. So at the end of the day, we have no proofs for the Rosh. We have Machlek is Gdeli, Rishayim, the Rosh and Rabbeinu Avigdor. This idea of Rabbeinu Avigdor, that that the kinyon is a kinyon lizman, and it's going to almost going back by itself. So we could begin to understand that, at least conceptually, it's, you know, whether or not we like that for Lulav and Esrog, it's easy for us to understand that it was only given for X amount of time, and now it comes back. But according to the Rosh, it's a little bit harder for us to pinpoint what exactly is happening. It sounds like we're almost talking in circles, that I'm giving it to you, it's yours, the Olam Vod is going to be yours forever, Ad Bias Goel, Ad Biyad B'chlas, ever, ever, to the end of days, it's going to be yours. But by the way, don't tell anyone I have a condition, you have to return to me in the next 10 seconds. So isn't that a strange thing? Isn't that a strange concept that here I make it tonight, and the tonight superficially appears to undermine the entire Matana? So the answer is it's not so strange because I threw in a word superficially. It superficially undermines the Matana, but if you analyze it correctly in Halacha, then it doesn't really, because it's really a throwback that you understand Tanoim in general. So let's leave the realm of the Tanoim and Asahaksa for a moment. Talk about other kinds of Tanoim. See, a person is Mekadesh Nisha on the condition that it's going to rain tomorrow. So Mekadesh Nisha on the condition that she's going to give him a gift tomorrow. A person is Megarish Nisha on the condition that she's going to give such and such tomorrow. There are many, many Tanoim in Halacha. We have a whole parish of Mishpatei Tanoim derived from Bnei Gad Bnei Reuven. Moshe Rabbeinu gives them to Eivar Yarden on the east side of Eretz Yisrael on the condition that they're going to come to war on the west side of the Yarden. So that's the model that Mishnah says a Kedushin for all the Tanoim, a Matanis, Kedushin, Mechiris, Gittin, etc. So there is a parsha, there is an institution of Halacha of a Tanai, but it's a very strange thing. How do you understand these ideas of making Chalos al-Tanai? So do we understand that a Chalos al-Tanai is really a full-fledged Chalos, which is almost a Tanai, almost a holding it back? Or do I say no? And whenever you make a Tanai, that inhibits the very Chalos itself. So we have to fine-tune a little bit what a Tanai really is, what a Tanai is not, in order to understand how the Rosh is invoking that principle of Tanai, because the Rosh is calling this a real 100% Matana with a Tanai. We're not sure we understand properly what a Tanai really is, so hopefully we have to understand what a Tanai is, and then understand how the Rosh is plugging in that model of Tanai into Matana Zachzgen. Rabbi Novik at this point would say, she has time for the summer ready. He says, it's not a Tanai, it's Kedil Isman. Don't bother me with Tanayim. But according to the Rosh, we still don't quite understand what the role of a Tanai is. Hopefully, Mitzvah Shem. So people, the other will be around on Monday. We'll still be around Monday morning.
Yep.
Okay, that's hopefully Mitzvah on Monday. We'll try to put the final touches on the Sugya. And then,
the Rosh could just say that it's Lachem, which is the inhibiting factor. But it still could be Matana, could be a bona fide, you know, yours 100%, it's just a lachem, it's an added requirement that requires you.
Right, okay, so we're going to have to see, because this issue of how to understand tonight goes way, way, way beyond the sugi. It's going to become, it's important, whether we follow the Rosh Hashanah or whether we revamp one of them, we still have to understand this, because it's very hard to talk about kinyan tonight without really, really understanding what the role of tonight is.